You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. You want to weigh in on anything. Still come on the program in about a half hour from the Alabama Policy Institute. Former State Senator Phil Williams. And we'll wrap it all up with the official Democrat response of the program, former Congressman Parker Griffin. So stick around for that. But join us now. Very pleased to bring on my next guest. I want to thank him for taking time to come on this morning from AL.com. Cameron Smith joins us. Cameron, how are you?
Doing great, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. I assume you listened to Marshall Yates yesterday, Mo Brooks' chief of staff. He took issue with some of the things you wrote in your column, particularly with not approaching them before you wrote it and seeking a comment. The categorization that you didn't get the full context of what was going on January 6th. I've explained it over and over again on the program, kind of what you were trying to capture there, that by wearing body armor, that Congressman Brooks maybe knew something was up and he should have tried to de-escalate, but instead the speech maybe escalated. Is that a fair categorization? And what do you think?
Sure, Jeff. I totally understand Marshall being upset with questions about what his boss knew. I mean, but the idea that a political campaign is able to control the message, or I have some obligation to call them and say, hey, give me how you'd like me to present this. I mean, you're a columnist, man. As long as the quote is accurate, it's something that someone actually said, then it's fair game to write about. And that's what I did in this context. I asked their communications director and Marshall if I needed to retract the quote, if the quote that was published in Slate was in fact inaccurate. And they have not said that yet. If the quote's inaccurate and it wasn't something Congressman Brooks actually said, then fine. I completely understand that. And my point in the article was, I mean, and y'all actually made this point well yesterday, that the blustering and bellicose rhetoric from Congressman Brooks isn't something new, but if he had specific knowledge that that situation is something that, you know, needed to be de-escalated, because come on, man, you know this, our rhetoric has gotten off the chain wild in certain contexts, it might have been an opportunity to lead. I'm not suggesting that he is criminally liable or even civilly liable, but one of the things folks like Washington and Madison contemplated in our senators is the ability to cool down the passions of the public and, frankly, the House of Representatives. I don't think Mo Brooks has the ability to do that. I think he likes being a bomb thrower. This is his rhetoric. And when the moment might call for something different, I don't think he has the ability to shift gears appropriately.
So it's just a question of judgment, and you take the issue you take. It's just his judgment in that situation that, while legally he was well within his rights and he didn't do anything necessarily wrong by the letter of the law, that it's more of a judgment call and better judgment should have prevailed.
Yeah, and I take this very seriously. I think particularly political speech, we have to protect even when it might not be good judgment to say it. I've literally been sued by a Democratic state school board member for quoting her directly and criticizing that speech. So I know how important it is to protect speech, but our leaders need to be able to tone this down and say, whoa, 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 this is a potentially explosive situation. Let's think about where we want to win. I mean, is it in the rhetoric or is it at the ballot box? Is it in the halls of Congress? And I think that's where the focus needs to be. And that was the point of the article. It was not to suggest that Congressman Brooks couldn't say those things. It's that it wasn't a good idea.
And I'm not necessarily saying that you're wrong in making that argument, but do you think that is that where the Republican base, your typical Republican primary voter, is right now? Do you think that they are looking, maybe a bomb thrower is kind of what the electorate wants right now?
So I think about this a lot because you and I, you know, have exchanges on this point of where is the electorate, and they do want a fighter. And I'll use President Trump as an example. You know that I've criticized him on character and other areas, but one area that I really think he did something that was significant is he actually impacted things with the judges that he nominated, with his executive orders. He actually fought. He showed a real impact for the office he held. What I don't see is that Congressman Brooks and his colleagues have been there for a long time, and they didn't do the things necessary to make those changes permanent. And so when I see the shtick of fearless fighter, I say, tell me more about that. If you're just going to be a rhetorical, you say a lot of socialists behind every bush, Pelosi's evil, bad things are happening. Well, that's great, but that's not actually the job. The job is to enact conservative legislation. It is to rein in government, reduce spending. And in that regard, Congress has been largely ineffective during the tenure that Mo Brooks has been there.
But here, I think you're right, but they don't have they would make this argument to you that they never had the numbers, they never had the ability, that, you know, they run on Congress, members of Congress are running for the Senate or whatever. These politicians, they run on one thing, and I'll throw this example. They ran on repealing Obamacare for almost a decade. They finally get the opportunity, and they can't. They're not able to pull it off. The Republican Party is not, and they're unable to pull that off. That it just seems that you get a lot of happy talk, and then you don't get the necessarily. You don't get the results. Now, in the case of Congressman Brooks, I think that day with the election, I mean, that was kind of a captured moment in time, when there was a lot of, you know, a lot of upset people about the election. Did they actually believe something went wrong? And I think that Mo Brooks, maybe he was speaking for them, and to not acknowledge that there's a significant number of people in the electorate, whether you agree with them or not, it's not important. But you got to acknowledge that's where the energy was of the day, and it remains to be, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, and I'm not actually arguing that point. I think that you're right. A lot of people were ticked. I mean, Trump lost to Joe Biden, who may be the worst candidate ever. The guy was – Sleepy Joe was not an unfair moniker, because he did kind of lay low, and the election was a referendum on Trump. My point is – I've watched what's happened in conservative circles, and it's been let's win the rhetorical battle because we don't know how to be effective at governing. We say we don't like the things that Pelosi and Schumer are doing, but we're not able to counter and build majorities so that they have to be the ones opposing us. That's the skill. That's what we need. I don't need a bomb thrower. Alabama doesn't need a bomb thrower in order to accomplish those goals. If you want somebody that wins rhetorically, turn on Fox News. I mean, go on Twitter. But if you want a senator that's going to push for conservative change and knows how to do that, they better be able to do more than just yell and scream. They better be able to build majorities, build coalitions in Congress, in the Senate, to advance those priorities. That's how it works.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that Mo Brooks isn't your guy for U.S. Senate.
You know, I think that's a fair limb to go out on, because I keep seeing the same thing. I mean, if I'm wrong, if I can look at Mo Brooks' track record as a legislator, the only measure that has passed the House and Senate, which he sponsored, was a post office naming. If you want to know what he does well, it's take requests for earmarks for provisions in, you know, the military spending bill, things like that. And he does bring home the bacon for some of the businesses in his congressional district. But that's a big difference from what his rhetoric says, that he's an outsider. He's not in as part of the swamp. He's a good rank and file congressman. But, you know, does he have leadership upside? I don't see it.
Would it be fair to say that I don't know where you are, but is Katie Britt your candidate right now, as far as you can tell?
You know, I have sort of pointed out the challenges with Brooks. I still think he's the front runner heavily. I think the odds are Trump comes in, says rah rah, and Trump's still the leader. Britt's got her own baggage. She's got to explain her issue with the tax hike that I opposed. I think that, you know, that type of stuff makes it a challenge for her. I don't know where Blanchard is. I mean, and Taylor man, that was a special campaign ad. But short of that, I mean, I think your options basically boil down to Britt and Brooks. And in that respect, I think maybe Britt has some upside that Brooks doesn't have.
All right, fair enough. But we have these discussions all the time. Well, we don't say all the time. We had one big blow up, I guess, maybe a few weeks ago. That I get your approach. And look, if we lived in a vacuum and we could enact all these conservative ideas, that would be great. And you spend a lot of time talking about these things, but we don't operate in a vacuum. And when you talk about, I don't know, like, you know, necessarily a Mo Brooks not being as effective as he could be, but there's all these little battles within the electorate's in one place. You got to kind of, I think you always have to defer to where elections go and what you got to do to win elections and try to learn from that. But the idea that we can institute, you know, William F. Buckley's idea of a perfect government, I don't think it's practical. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think that's why you see this, they call it reactionary populism, but people push it back. They look at what's going on in D.C., and you get a Donald Trump who's just going to upset the apple cart. And we have to, kind of build from there.
Yeah, and I actually agree with you. I mean, the truth is, I mean, I kind of criticize you for being sort of more populist. This is where the base is. You're absolutely right. I can't argue with you in that. And you criticize me, like, get your head out of the clouds. Quit thinking about where we need to go. And the truth is, you need both, right? You need folks that are saying, okay, how can we do this more effectively? How can we advance conservative priorities? And I need somebody like you being like, hey, you do realize that your needle-headed policy analysis isn't connecting, because if it doesn't connect, it's pointless. And so it's a give and take. It's a back and forth. But it can't be just one or the other, because if it's one or the other, I mean, Democrats can find a way to go forward. We need more than a simple majority. And, you know, that means all of us have to kind of come in this together.
Well, I don't know even if it's about connecting. I think, you know, like I said, if we could wake up tomorrow and go back to the basics, that would be fantastic. And I think that connects with a lot of people. But is it a reasonable expectation that we could ever get there? We have half the country divided one way or another. And, you know, getting everything like you wanted, it's not reasonable. But on the other hand, the electorate could do certain things to make it either more difficult to clog up the system. But like a lot of it, it seems a little tone deaf at times to say, hey, if you just do this, then this is going to happen. But this doesn't happen. And I go back to this, Obamacare, we're going to repeal that. It doesn't happen. The politics just don't lend themselves to it. You don't have the numbers necessarily. And getting to that point, it doesn't, you know, we've been trying for 40 years to get to that point. Well, ever since Reagan left, I guess. We never can pick that up again. So then what?
Yeah, and I hear you, but put it this way. The next Democratic president is going to be, or candidate, is going to be Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. Good grief. If there's ever been an opportunity for a Republican to clean up, it's in that election. I believe strongly that the House is going to flip Republican in the next midterm. Republicans are going to have a shot at governing. They're going to have those numbers. The question is, can you hold a coalition of the populist base and the folks like Mitt Romney and Ben Sasse to advance priorities, rein in government, and do the things that we're talking about? I think we got to prep for that. I think that we have to have a deck of here's where we want to go. Because I really believe that that can happen. I don't think that's pie in the sky. I think the numbers bear it out. But if you get that opportunity and then you start developing your plan, you're in big trouble. And that's why I'm sort of screaming at the top of my lungs, let's have a plan for the next time we have these numbers, which I believe will be sooner rather than later.
Well, that's great. But in the meantime, you still got to win elections to get there. And, you know, You got to recognize it. People are upset. They're angry. And you could try to say, well, you shouldn't be, or try to guide, you know, where that discussion ought to go. But the fact of the matter is politicians are being dictated to by voters what they want. And at times, whether you like it or not, you're going to get the Mo Brooks elected. You're going to get a Freedom Caucus, Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and you got to account for that. I mean, that's all part of the big equation. And where do you got to give a little there and acknowledge people's emotions in this, and that's where we are. And I think talking about the ideas is very important, but how do you incorporate the emotional aspect into this discussion as well?
Well, I think that you're right. I see the same anger you do. The question is, do you want to be angry on Twitter and win on Twitter, or do you want to find a way to win in the legislature? Because guess what? I mean, the senator from Alabama, almost certainly, regardless of who is elected, the Democrats are not going to win. It's going to be a Republican, and they're going to vote with Republicans. I mean, statistically, we know that's going to happen. If they don't, they'll be gone so fast it'll make your head spin. So that's not the issue. The issue is, do they have the ability to help advance those conservative priorities? I mean, I gave Senator Tuberville a lot of credit. I mean, he didn't really run much of a campaign, but man, you know, after putting his foot in his mouth early, he's really shown that senatorial demeanor. He said he's been very level-headed. You know, he's telling Dr. Fauci, hey, you know what? If you want to reduce vaccine hesitancy, give Trump credit for the vaccine, that kind of thing. That's smart, keeps the tone down, really leads well. And that's something Alabamians can be proud of. That kind of demeanor is something that's important. It doesn't mean that you have to capitulate to the progressive left's nuttiness. It's just beat them where it counts. Don't try to run up the scoreboard on social media or on Fox News. Run it up in the legislature, and that's what we want to see.
Cameron, we're up against a break here. Folks want to check you out online. Tell them where to look.
At D. Cameron Smith on Twitter, al.com/opinion. Come and holler at me. It's cool these days.
All right, Cameron, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Jeff.
We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
In first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant.